We are now live.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. It looks like we only have a couple of SPC members on the call yet so far. So Camille, I don't know if you've heard from anyone else in terms of participation today.
I have not.
Okay.
I have not.
All right. Well,
so if we don't have a quorum yet, we can push action items back.
Okay. What is our quorum again?
To see if we get at 8. We have a quorum at 8.
Okay. Yeah, we only have 5 of us on the call, it looks like. So we will have to move those things back for now. Should we wait to do roll call, Camille, then, until we think we have a quorum?
No, we should do roll call now, and then just note whenever anybody joins.
Cool. All right. Thank you all for bearing with me, as I am still new to kind of running these meetings. But welcome. Good evening to everybody. Thanks for the folks who are able to join us so far. We'll quickly do roll call. I think I will just start by calling out the folks that I see here. So Marianne is here.
Here.
I see Mike Eister.
Here.
Amy Cubbage. You're here, great. And Carl.
I am here.
Carl. Are there any committee members that I missed? Okay, great. Well, Camille, if you can help me keep an eye on that, that would be really helpful. I don't have any kind of initial preliminary remarks. I think I just wanted to briefly run through what our agenda looks like with everybody. The two kind of big focuses of our conversation are going to be starting our work around the board's strategic business planning process and how SPC will help to inform that work. So we'll start by talking at kind of the top level around the why statement, kind of the visionary language of LTD. And then we're going to get an update and have a discussion around transit tomorrow and some decision-making that the board will be doing on that process and project pretty shortly.
I'm here.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Brady Brindle.
Andy, can you guys be quiet? I'm on a Zoom meeting.
Okay. I guess that puts us at 7. So we're just, I believe, 1 short of a quorum so far. So we'll see if we get anyone else to participate. Thank you, Franny and Greg, for joining us. We are also a couple of administrative pieces. We'll just get a brief recruitment update at the front of the meeting from AJ, where we are on adding some more members to SPC, and then how that informs kind of our meeting schedule moving forward and making sure this is the best time for everybody. Great. I think that's it for now. So we can't do minutes quite yet. Audience participation. Camille, do we have anyone, any members of the public participating?
Yes, I have 2 people showing they would like to speak.
Okay.
Bear with me 1 second. Let me get the timer up and I will call on those individuals.
While you do that, I can just run through quickly these instructions. So we reserve kind of this section of our agenda for any comment from members of the public. So just quickly, it sounds like 2 people have already done this, but if you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button within Zoom. If you're on the phone only, you can press *9 and your phone on your phone, and that will kind of raise your hand for us to see that you want to speak. When it's your time to speak, we'll call your name. If you're attending via the phone only, the last 4 digits of your phone number are what's going to be called out rather than your name. We'll ask when you start your public comment to just share with us your name, your city of residence, and who you're representing for the record for the meeting. And then once you've provided your testimony, your hand will be lowered. We ask that you don't raise your hand again because only one opportunity to speak will be provided. If you're unable or don't want to speak publicly, you're certainly welcome and encouraged to share your testimony via email to Camille, who is clerk@ltd.org. And that information should be in the meeting materials online as well. So Camille will have our timer going and we'll let you know when you are at the end of your time.
Bear with me 1 second, but sharing is not wanting to share.
And Sherry, I see that you joined us. Welcome.
Okay, first up will be Linda Duggan. Go ahead, Linda.
Like she's on mute.
Yeah. It looks like we might be having a technical difficulty. I apologize.
Now can you hear me?
Oh. Now we can hear you. Thank you, okay. Linda.
I'll start again, sorry. This is Linda Duggan of Eugene. I'm a retired special educator, having taught for 40 years. And my son is a dedicated bus rider who started by riding to Roosevelt and is currently in college. What is LTD's responsibility for community access for public transportation? Everything I read or hear is that the future is public mass transportation. I think LTD's role is to provide neighborhood bus transportation that is accessible for as many people as possible. Elementary, middle, high school, and college students, workers, elderly, and general riders. Availability and access are the key words. This includes, in addition to main arteries, major and minor corridors in the neighborhoods that connect to the main arteries. It is important to have a model of service that does not reduce public transportation, but instead increases access to public transportation. Community input is necessary and essential for planning any changes in service after the pandemic. This is not the time to be making any changes in service for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, next up we have Jess Roshek.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead, Jess.
Okay, Jess Roshek, Eugene, Southeast Eugene Transportation Committee. As we understand it, later in this meeting, Mr. Schwetz or Ms. Jackson will be reviewing for you the recent history of Transit Tomorrow, which most like recently the board of directors voted to delay further decision making on until, quote, pandemic restrictions have been lifted. I'm speaking to fully endorse that LTD honor that vote. They made the 100% correct decision, and right now is not the correct time to conjecture about or make decisions about any permanent system redesign of any kind, whether it's referred to as ridership model or 8218 or 7525 or frequent transit network or Transit Tomorrow. The enormous needs of the community before COVID absolutely are going to pale in comparison with the task our community will face in the months and years ahead. And the worst, both economically and epidemiologically, are probably still ahead of us. And there's just so much that we just don't know. But someone will inevitably say that we need to prepare for when we come out of this, or changes won't happen until fall 2021. These arguments don't hold up very well. I know for certain that number one, our current public transport patterns during COVID don't and will not represent the future post-COVID needs. And I also know that two, our former pre-COVID patterns before all this do not represent what our community's needs are going to look like when we come out of this. We're just going to be forever changed by this period, but precisely in what ways we don't know, and we need to be patient and find out. So unless everyone has a crystal ball and knows what those new patterns are going to be, or what the 2020 census data is in the spring, it's irresponsible to just start guessing and planning details of wholesale redesign of a transit system until those things are known. It's just irresponsible to ask the public to engage on this issue right now, when people are literally fighting for their livelihoods and lives at the moment. So if the SPC is gonna endorse the board forging ahead with something like Transit Tomorrow or frequent transit network redesign for next fall, remember that households struggling in every single way imaginable right now, any frequent, even infrequent, even schedule-driven access to public transportation is better than no access to a bus route at all. And it's a lifeline on which people have chosen houses and jobs around, and to cut access at this impossible time is just unjust. Choose routes that maintain or increase the community's access to buses and not decrease access by 5%, which the old planned route did in November. When the budget allows, sure, go ahead and grow a frequent transit network by adding buses on routes, whatever, but never at the expense of cutting access even one bus-dependent rider at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess, for your comment and for joining us today.
I am not showing anyone else wanting to speak.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Linda and Jess, for your comments today. Useful as we revisit some of these conversations around Transit Tomorrow a little bit later in our meeting. So we appreciate you taking the time to be here today. I believe we had a couple of members join us while we were doing public comments. So Sherry, I see you here. Welcome.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. And then Joe Burney, I see.
I see you too.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I got everybody. So that should put us above our quorum. So I think we have just a couple of action items for the beginning of the meeting. First is the approval of minutes from our July 7th meeting.
Move approval.
Mike moves for approval. Do I have a second?
I'll second. This is Sherry.
Sherry seconds. Great. And remind me, Camille, I should just go person by person to get approval?
Yes, please. That would be great.
Okay. Joe Burney?
You're asking for individual approvals of the minutes?
I think so. I think that's the process.
Okay, I was not at the last meeting and I approve.
Okay, Carl?
Aye.
Amy?
Aye.
Franny?
Aye.
Thanks. Greg?
Aye.
And Mary Ann? Okay, I approve as well. All right, all in approval. We can move on here.
I voted aye also.
I voted aye also.
Yes, sorry. Thank you. Okay, before we talk a little bit about the SPC meeting schedule, I am hoping that AJ, you can provide a quick update on recruitment for this committee.
Yes.
Can you guys hear me? Staff and I have reached out to a few individuals. I think Greg Evans has actually also helped us out reaching out to individuals. We're looking for individuals that meet the SBC criteria. We're really focusing in for this recruitment on individuals that represent organizations that are nonprofit or transit users, people engaged with, like I think I said, low-income households, and also bring in some diversity, people of color. We want to make sure that we have enough voices on this committee to represent all views. We also have asked individuals who could either join this committee or Accessible Transportation Committee who represent the our people with disabilities. So we're hoping to allow them a little bit more time to submit. Camille has already forwarded a set of applications that we received, but because people still are have a lot going on, we wanted to make sure we provide them at least another week or so. So I expect to bring you back applications of those that submitted and provide you our recommendation that we would for individuals, and you can choose to make a recommendation as well prior to them going to the board of directors for approval. So definitely, at least we are getting some interest, but we definitely think that, especially as we're talking about these important topics, that we want to make sure that everybody who should have a voice is being invited.
Great. Thank you for the update. Any comments, questions, additions from committee members on that?
Is there a deadline for applications, AJ, if there are still more people that might be interested?
We didn't give them a hard deadline
okay.
because COVID-19,
yeah.
but I would say we're probably going to do another screening next week, because we're going to give people at least another week. They won't come back to SPC till the first week in September. So at a maximum 2 weeks
okay.
from maybe today. At that time, it allows us to screen them all, look at their apps, and bring back those that we recommend to this committee.
AJ, it looks like on LTD's website on the employment section where people have been linking to that committee, it looks like the deadline's August 31st. Is that correct?
I believe we put that because we also have the Comprehensive Accessible Transportation Committee as well. But we prefer to make that appointment sooner than later. So we're continuously leaving that open. I think Camille's leaving it open only because we've had so much turnover. Is that correct, Camille?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so really, if we have anybody who we think ought to apply, make it happen in the next couple weeks rather than by the 31st.
Yes, because it wouldn't make it in time to bring back to this committee. That's the only reason. I mean, if somebody applied after and we still had openings, we would accept them, right? So we have enough vacancies that we are not cutting people off, but we definitely do have to start making some appointments sooner than later.
Okay, thank you.
And then just to clarify the timeline a little bit further, so you're anticipating bringing the applicants that you would move forward at the September meeting, and then they would potentially join as official committee members in October? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Other questions from folks, comments? Okay. Part of the why I wanted to have that earlier in our agenda is because we have talked a little bit about whether we need to reschedule these SPC meetings or move them forward in the day. You know, right now these are falling over the dinner hour for most folks, are a little bit late in the evening. So we can have that discussion today. The other option is to wait until we have our new committee members on board. AJ, I'm not sure if you all have received questions or concerns from potential applicants over when our current meeting schedule is.
What I will say is that we know that individuals with disability or access to transportation typically cannot make later meetings, especially when they were in person. Mm-hmm. And we really had a lot of individuals who had interest, especially in our disability community, wanting to be part of this particular conversation.
AJ, you're breaking up pretty badly, your audio connection.
Sorry about that. And maybe any better?
Probably my internet.
Sorry, it's just highs and lows of the internet. Let me try that again. So people in the in our disabled community or people with disabilities or transportation are the ones that are have the greatest challenges is accessing this committee should it go back to in person. Also people that are not traditional our office hour workers have challenges, so that's something else that we saw, that people who do have interest but don't work an 8-to-5 are not able to join committees like this. So we could assist if you guys want to discuss it today or would like to bring this back. Perhaps Camille could put a doodle poll and you guys could review that doodle poll at the next meeting that individuals could specify what they're not available absolutely doesn't work. And then if there is flexibility for meetings that allow individuals with not traditional work schedules or with limitations to participate.
Great. So I think I hear two options for us in moving forward realistically. So one is to go ahead and have Camille send out a doodle poll and look at different options right away. The second would be to table the conversation until October when we have our new members on board and they can participate in that decision making. Are there thoughts, opinions from committee members in terms of staying at this time, potentially rescheduling? Carl, I see a hand from you.
Yeah, I just want to throw in a comment that I think we should always schedule for what would the present situation, so like who we have here now, to make sure, because I think we should get maximum involvement from the people who are here. The other thing I think it's just worth considering is that, I've always said this for regular LTD board meetings too, is to always try to take into account what other people's, the public schedule is, so that there is at least a realistic possibility that they could come and make public comment. It's not always going to be perfect. And I'm not even saying that there can't be some flexibility there and some good balance there, but just something I think it's really important for us to keep in mind as a committee.
Great. Thank you. Other comments?
So can you, you must not be able to see me.
Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, I felt like, you know, since I've been a member of this group, the 5:30 time has worked relatively well for me, and I think it's worked well for people who've come in and testified, and I've always enjoyed the meals that we've had as well. So if you guys wanted to ship us meals that we could just sit around and eat, you know, while we're Zooming. Anyway, and I agree with Carl, you know, the time that works best for the public. And quite often that is after work, so evening meetings, and 5:30 is not too late normally. So, but I would be interested in hearing what other people, you know, especially those who are interested in coming on board, had to say.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of my preference, I think, would be to get the new folks on the committee and then do this polling so that we're sure that it works for everybody. I guess the devil's advocate to that is if they're signing up for the committee at the time that it is now, it probably does work. So two sides of the same coin.
That works for me too. This is Amy. I think it would be good to maybe wait for other folks to come on.
Any final comments from other committee members? Okay. I would tend to agree that I'd rather wait until we have our new members on board and can make a fully informed decision. So Camille and AJ, I think it would be really helpful as you're screening candidates to even just ask them informally, you know, do you see any conflicts with this meeting time? Just so we have a sense. But then starting in October, once we have those folks on board, or even if we have time in advance of the October meeting, being able to send out that doodle poll and get a sense of what's going to work best for everyone.
May I make a late input?
Yes, please.
Some Tuesday nights it works for me. Some Tuesday nights it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we will have a Board of Commissioners input session that starts at the exact same time after a long meeting. So I don't think you're going to, soft stuff is great. I myself sometimes will determine if I can now, especially, join a group based upon when they meet. And if I don't know when they meet, that makes it even softer. Mm-hmm. So however you decide to proceed, I would just say stick with it, and if people can make it, they can, and if they can't, they can't. And or you may want to just pick a time that you're going to stick with, unless your ideal candidates say, I would do it, but I can't make that time. This just, you know, I think this is sort of a waiting for Godot moment.
Yeah, it's all good points. Okay. So we'll table this now and stay with our 5:30 time for now, and keep with those evening times, but certainly to staff, if you can have some of those at least soft conversations and see if we're losing any good candidates due to the meeting time, I think that's something we certainly all want to know. And it sounds like have some flexibility around. Okay, well, with that, I think those are our action kind of admin items. We'll dig into the meat of our meeting today. We're going to start the strategic business plan conversation around the why statement, and then move into a longer discussion around transit tomorrow and how we can support the board in making some important decisions. So I don't see Tom on here, Camille. I'm not sure then who's presenting this next section.
He's there.
Okay, great. Hand it over to you, Tom.
And Camille, if you could, oh, there's Jennifer. Excellent. And Jennifer is going to navigate the presentation. If you want to share your screen.
Can everyone see this? Okay, perfect. All right, so we wanted to talk with SPC this evening about the why statement and as it relates to the strategic business plan. I am Jennifer Zankowski. I am on the planning team and have been asked to be the project manager for this project. So this is the first time LTD has developed a strategic business plan. So I did a lot of due diligence and read strategic business plans from a variety of transit agencies around the country and pulled from the best of each to develop an outline, and which is what you see on your screen right now. We are in the scoping process. So fleshing out the scope of work, and we do intend to hire a consultant to help us through some of these elements of the project. And in terms of a estimated time to get started, the procurement process takes about 6 months. So getting a consultant on board and actively engaged is probably a winter start. And I'd like to just take a quick moment to talk through some of these elements. And you will see in red, the why is part of the guiding star policies. So the elements of the plan are really doing a deep dive, gathering data, doing interviews, to do an internal and an external scan of LTD, understanding strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, going through a process to define our why, how, and what. And we'll go more into what that means for each of those words. The strategic business plan is confined to a 10-year planning horizon. So part of the process is going through prioritization and defining what our strategic goals and objectives are for the organization. That ties back to the why and to the how. And then defining our tactical goals and objectives for staff and team. And that ties back to the higher level what. The other elements of the project include defining our performance metrics. So we need to know if we're succeeding in achieving our goals and objectives by being very clear how we're going to measure it. And then the other two elements are developing a plan to implement. So how does these, who's responsible for implementing some of these goals and objectives, the timelines we want to achieve these goals, more specifics about how the strategic business plan elements fold into our regular processes, so our budget process, our CIP process, defining the format and frequency that we will be reporting out on our progress of our strategic objectives and goals, and then developing a business plan that is an accessible document that can be communicated both internally and externally. So, digging more into the why, we are going to start with our current existing why statement, and I'm going to let Tom take it from here.
Do you want to go into presentation mode?
I can.
Just makes it a little bit bigger. Okay, there you go. So, just to, some background. This is the existing why statement. It was developed about 6 or 7 years ago, and was based on a model developed by a guy named Simon Sinek. And he wrote a book called Start With Why before this. So one of the things I want to talk about here is this statement was based on a lot of input from staff at LTD. It was actually developed, the actual final statement was developed by a consulting firm, Bell and Funk, and presented to the board, like I said, 6 or 7 years ago. And I'll just say, interestingly, we had a board retreat in December where I went over this material with the board. And at one point, I just asked the question around whether any of them felt they owned this statement. And there was nobody raised their hand. So it really is important for the board to develop this why statement. And I'll go into the model and kind of where the board's gotten this statement further on in the presentation. But what we're looking for you is just your feedback on what we've developed. So you want to go to the next slide then? So first of all, a little bit about the model. And you can see this is the diagram that that Simon Sinek developed. And again, his book, Start With Why, that's what we're starting. The why statement is developed at the board level and really collectively defines the beliefs of the organization, the mission and purpose. The how is something that, based on what the board and by extension the community says why LTD exists, the GMs, the directors, managers in the organization will develop actions taken to try and realize this statement. And then at the staff level, is where, as we say here, literally the rubber meets the road. And so that's the organization of this model and how it works. Go ahead. So the purpose of the why is really to orient the again broad articulation of why an organization exists as really a foundation for determining, well, if this is why we exist, how do we do what we do? And really what, as Simon Sinek says, what we do is proof of who we are. And so that's the kind of underlying basis for this. We're not going to go through this tonight, but in your materials, we included an article by a guy named Deem Bokhari on how to find your why and communicate your purpose. It's a useful article to go through in terms of how he formats his why, and kind of he presents an easy way to think about it, which you'll see reflected in some of the board's work further on in the presentation. But I encourage you to go through that. It's a pretty quick read, and it can just kind of get you going as to how powerful a why statement can be. So go ahead. So after the retreat, we came back to the board at a work session in February, and we gave them a starter statement based on what we'd heard from the board retreat discussion. And this is the range of ideas that they came up with, and we've captured all of them here. But the statement in green that says to provide safe, reliable transportation services, to provide equitable access to the community while keeping economic prosperity, economic or environmental impact, and the needs of our community members at the forefront. That came, well, literally to the forefront of the board's discussion. And so that's the one that's kind of the working why, if you will. And what we propose for the SPC tonight is to take a look at that. And you want to move to the next slide? we posed a couple of strategic questions there for you to consider in looking at this statement and basically providing some feedback to the board. And so the first question is, does this statement provide clarity on who we are and as an agency and why we exist? Another question, does the statement reflect what the board feels is the community's wants, needs, and expectations? And is the statement clearly articulated? So those are things that, those are elements or key questions around this, consider this a draft, a board draft of the statement. And we'd like to engage you in a conversation around those questions and any other comments you might have to share with the board.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer and Tom. Any initial thoughts? Maybe let's start with that first question around kind of clarity as to where LTD is as an agency and kind of the true why of the work.
And I should say Jennifer's going to take notes as we go.
Yes. Here. I think I see a hand from Franny and then Sherry after that.
Yeah, I like this statement. I think it's a little wordy. I'm clear about the safe, reliable transportation services and equitable access to the community. The part where it goes on about economic prosperity, environmental impact, it seems like that might be wordsmithed a little bit more to make it a little more succinct. Like my first question is economic prosperity to who? You know, that's kind of maybe in a sustainable manner or something could also take in economic prosperity and environmental impact in the same idea. I love that equitable is in there and safety is in there and reliability is in there and access is in there. Those are the most important points, I think, that are in a strategic plan. The reason I think it might be a little wordy is because I remember going through this exercise with ODOT, and we wanted, and also we got this idea from NASA, that when NASA came up with their mission statement, they wanted it to be so simple that the janitor in the building knew what it was. You know, that the idea was we're going to the moon, you know, kind of thing. We're going to rally our forces and our mission is to go to the moon and explore the moon. And so everybody knew that in NASA and everybody worked to achieve that goal. I think that this mission is achievable, but it would be nice if it was a little bit more soundbite-ish so that every bus driver, every person inside the agency and the community as a whole could pretty much put it in their vision and know it. That's all.
Can I ask a follow-up question? So Franny, I like that feedback. And I mean, you've been around these types of statements long enough to recognize that that last part is trying to capture triple bottom line perspective. And I think triple bottom line itself is not the right answer. But do you have any thoughts in the work that you've done with ODOT around how to maybe craft that a little bit differently? And maybe that's a question for the broader group as well.
I think that the word sustainability might capture that from the environmental impact. Instead of the environmental impact, like sustainable manner, or I don't know that sustainability necessarily captures the economic prosperity, but it would the environmental impact piece. And we know that the community members would be at the forefront. I mean, to provide a safe, reliable transportation service, you already say access to the community. You don't need to say keeping the community at the forefront, I don't think, again. I think the community, I think it's implied that community members, that the community as a whole is the customer.
That's helpful.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Thanks, Franny. Sherry, you had a comment?
Yes. I appreciate, when I, you mentioned the why statement that is now we're using, and I thought, wow, it doesn't say anything about transportation in that why statement. So it's nice to see one that actually involves transportation. And I also have been through classes that have talked about why statements and strategic planning and that sort of thing. And the same idea that Franny had mentioned is that everybody in the organization can say why we exist and what we do. And so succinct is really important. I like the word connecting that I saw in one of the other statements because I think, connecting the community is what we're all about. And to do that safely and equitably and sustainably is maybe a way of putting it all kind of in there. But this is too long, I agree. It really needs to be, when you go back to what you had mentioned on the other sheet, there was a statement right at the bottom that sort of had all these words in it, but it was only about, let's see, we connect people to the community. I like that. Reliable, equitable, safe transportation, that's the rest, but creating mobility options. I mean, all of those that are shorter than 10 words are really what I would think would be things that we could kind of get a hold on of. That's my comment.
Thank you, Sherry. Other folks? Amy, go ahead.
A comment. So I appreciate the opportunity that we have here to just talk about the why. I think that is, you know, the first step. My one question comment is, it sounds like Jennifer, you had mentioned that the consultant would be involved in doing some internal and external scans. So perhaps that would generate like some data, qualitative data that could be looked at to see if there are kind of phrases and words that come up repetitively from different stakeholders in the community externally or internally within LTD. And that could inform the why statement. You know, it's ultimately the board will have to adopt it. So I think, you know, the board's involvement in this creating the statement and our involvement is important, but they also represent the community. So if we have data that, you know, is going to be coming to us through this process, perhaps that could inform the development of the why statement if the timing is appropriate. I don't know if there's an urgency for us to develop the statement before we procure a consultant or if that could come later.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Sorry about that. I want to precede my remarks by saying hello to Sherry. Sherry, we never talk. And I haven't even heard your voice since I think about a 3-hour meeting we once had. forgive my input. These are questions first. How long has this discussion been going on about a why statement?
We've had the session with the retreat and then a work session with the board in February.
So time frame, that there's actually been staff time that costs money attached to this process. I'm going to make comments, but I just don't know. I don't know if this has been a huge undertaking, almost nothing, but you have to politically touch base. I'm just curious about time that you've given this thus far.
Well, I would say staff has, this isn't, what do I want to say? It's not something that I spend my days doing. But we did engage. I mean, we spent more time in the original why statement 6 or 7 years ago, and we spent time obviously preparing for the retreat and taking the board through this. But otherwise,
And I didn't mean that as like antagonistically as it might have sounded. I was just curious because I'm also looking at the screen, and it looks like the strategic planning committee is trying to develop wordsmith a statement that doesn't even come from us. It comes from the LTD board. So I'm just looking at this. Here are my inputs. Einstein said if he couldn't explain his theories to a 6-year-old, he didn't understand them well enough, or words to that effect. I can tell you it took half an hour for my past business to come up with one word that explained everything what we did. By the way, that word was renew all, and our firm was a clean energy retrofit business. So it was one word. I would highly encourage, and I'm hearing all the people that are used to doing this. And so all I can say is that I would encourage better wordsmithing, tighter words. Don't worry about saying everything and being all things to all people. especially if you want a statement that stands out and gets attention. That's all.
Can I jump in here? I've been doing some scribbling.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay. Here's what I came up with. To be the premier, safe, reliable, equitable transportation choice for our community. 12 words.
So can you go through that again, Greg?
To be the premier, safe, reliable, equitable transportation choice for our community. And I kind of went back and forth with the word choice and alternative interchangeably. So just right off the top of the head.
For what it's worth, I think you're up top of the head is damn good, Greg. I think you you got real close there.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, Greg. You have 12 words there. I was thinking the example that Simon Sinek used was, and Apple may have changed this, but Apple's at the time was, in everything we do, we seek to challenge the status quo. So it's like 11 words or something. But yeah, it's pretty concise there.
That's Trump's MO too.
Hey, Leah, would this be a good time for me to jump in?
Yeah, go for it.
Thanks. I just wanted to acknowledge Joe's question or answer Joe's question as a member of the board. I can't speak for the entire board, but the reason it's really helpful to have SBC, and I think Greg was a great example of this as a former LTD board member too, is that we have so many people here with various different expertise and backgrounds that while ultimately the statement needs to be something the board believes in, can operate with, it should be informed by people like you. I at least that's the way I feel. That's how I feel about it. And surely, I mean, I think there are things that you can tell us that will help us craft an even better statement, because we really need something to always look back to be able to drive decisions and strategies and other long-term plans too. So I wanted to fill that in. So I think Joe made a good point. And I want to address that point.
Carl, you are extremely kind. Thank you. And I want you to know I could not do better than what Greg just did in front of our very eyes.
that's why we have you guys here.
Go ahead, Sherry.
I just wanted to say that since I've been on this group, I have noticed that we have, you know, LTD has hired a lot of consultants, and I hear you talking about hiring a consultant again, and one of the things you said was to gather and analyze data, and I thought we had just gone through this huge undertaking where we gathered a lot of data and analyzed a lot of data. True, it had to do with where people are going and how to do that and everything. But it seems to me, and I try not to be too terribly critical, but I guess I am being, that I guess just hiring another consultant, so that somewhat bothers me. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe you could pare it down as to what the consultant would do, because there is already so much information that we've gathered, that we could use that information to use for this purpose, as well as, you know, tomorrow, transit tomorrow, and some of the purposes there.
Well, just to clarify what Jennifer was referring to in terms of the consultant was the just conducting the external and internal scan was what I would characterize as the only data gathering that they might do. And that just, it helps staff to have someone facilitating that. Otherwise, I think what we're looking for is more of a strategic planning expertise to help us put together the plan in the right way. And I would say, we didn't bring the full scope to you tonight, so we can't describe in more measured ways what the exact proportion of staff to consultants are, but we feel we're going to be procuring consulting assistance where we can most use it, and it won't be, they're not doing the entire thing, if that helps.
Can I just share my thoughts on that? I do think a lot of, I appreciate what you have to say, Sherry, and I do think a lot of we have a lot of data, and a lot of that process could be LTD staff. Where I feel there are opportunities to bring in expertise is helping us through the prioritization process of our goals and objectives, and perhaps help by providing examples of other implementation and monitoring plans. Since we haven't done this yet, that level and type of expertise, I think, is what I would hope to use a consultant for the most.
So maybe we want to go back to the why statement and see, I know, Leah, tell me if I'm wrong, but are we getting close to time on this?
We've got a little bit more time.
Okay. And it might help to, so we've gotten some really good input here tonight. We can, if others have some comments they'd like to add, let's get that down. But I think, and I'd look to Carl in terms of whether you think this is good, a good beginning in terms of coming back to the board and trying to nail down the why statement.
Do we have any additional comments from folks who have not been able to say anything yet?
I'd like to jump in if I can.
Yeah, go ahead, Marian.
I just wanted to say I really liked Greg's suggestion for the 12 words. I think particularly the mention of the premier transportation choice for our community, and I think that to me it sort of rolls up all of the triple bottom line that we really want people to choose public transportation because it's environmentally sound, because it helps with prosperity, and because it allows for access. And so I think in that it's a really lovely, succinct way to get at all of those things. And I agree with Joe that trying to say all things to everyone is a little bit too complicated. So if it were me, I would just put what Greg mentioned to the board and see where that goes.
Other comments?
If I can, Leah, what I heard from Mary Ann is she didn't word it in terms of a proposal or an action, but what I just heard her say is that we'll certainly share all of this with the board, but it sounds like there may be some interest in discussing whether what Greg came up with is what you want to go with. So I just want to make sure you process that.
I really like Greg's statement too. I think it's really succinct and gets to the point and is something that is can be repeated by what we were talking about before, everybody in the organization. It's easy to remember and restate. And then the other thing that you had talked about before was that the board comes up with the why, and then the GM directors and managers come up with the how and the staff come up with the what. So it would seem like we'd want a succinct statement of the why, like it is written here that Greg produced. And then the how is the economic, there's the prosperity piece and the economic and the environmental sustain, that's all the how, how we're going to do that, and then the staff is what specifically are we going to do. So anyway, I like it.
Good.
Yeah, I will just echo a lot of what's already been said. I think shorter is better. Can't be all things to all people. I think the first half of the existing statement, as well as what Greg proposed, kind of captures, I think, what's the most important piece. And I would agree with Franny. That was my initial thought, was that this second clause is really more of a how than it is the why, but I think it's all important content. So it's good stuff and it's a good conversation. Carl, hopefully this has been useful in terms of reporting back to the board.
It's very useful. And actually, I look forward to you can tell the board yourself actually at the next meeting, and I'll be there to back you up.
Good. So we as I understand it, Leah would come to the board and just go through this discussion and share the statement that Greg developed, and then the board would. I don't think we have to take any formal action at the board level right away, but you take that into consideration, I assume.
Go ahead, Carl.
Whoops. Absolutely. And I just want to add that I really appreciate the analysis and just making it more succinct and clear because, you know, I've said this too, if the board doesn't understand it, then likely the public doesn't understand it. And then it's just useless as a why statement. So thank you very much for all your thoughtful comments.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask, go ahead, Leah.
Oh, I was just going to see if there's any final comments from board members. I think almost everybody has given some comment, but go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to ask Jennifer, did we keep the elephant in the presentation or not?
Yeah.
Why don't we show them, since I've heard that all things for all people. Yeah. So this is a graphic that we developed for the board's retreat in December because we were concerned about trying to be all things for all people. And this is the proverbial, I think in the story, it's five or six blind people touching different parts of an elephant and thinking that it's one thing or the other. And you can see the elephant saying, can we really be all things to all people? So I appreciate that comment. And I think that's all staff has.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Amy.
I know I already spoke, but I just want to say ditto, too. I think the thing I like most about Greg's words there are that they're aspirational, and I don't think that the previous why statement was aspirational, but the word to be premier, I think I really think that's an important aspect of it. I also like the word choice, that, you know, folks have a choice. So, you know, what LTD does in the future to make that the choice that people want to make is, I think, a really good part of it too.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. Go ahead, Joe.
I just wanted to let Greg know I've got a couple of gigs for him of people that also are looking for a concise mission statement. I'm sorry. That's all.
Okay. Well, this is just the first of what will be many conversations to inform the strategic business plan over the next or the coming months. So we're starting kind of at the top of the pyramid here with the why statement, and we'll be moving down in subsequent meetings around the how and the why, getting into some of the long-range planning that LTD is taking on right now or is anticipating taking on that will kind of inform that work. So this was a really good starting point, I think, to get us all, it sounds like a lot of us are on the same page around what we interpret to be the why of LTD and sure the board will appreciate that, and we'll pick up this conversation again at future meetings. With that, I will hand it again back to staff to talk about transit tomorrow.
You have the presentation? Yes. Okay. So this presentation is looking at basically the goals that we have for this this agenda topic is to reacquaint you with the details of Transit Tomorrow. Speak to the situation we find ourselves in terms of the pandemic, and lay out a potential path forward in terms of how we think about our service model and kind of managing that through this period we're in. So to start with, Jennifer's going to go through the history.
Okay, so where have we been? We, as you all may know, we hired Jarrett Walker and Associates to help us with our comprehensive operational analysis. The blue highlights are the reports that they delivered to us. This project has had three phases of community engagement, although our phase three was paused in March due to the pandemic. And we've had some decision-making that has happened along the way. So I just wanted to go through those milestones, those decision milestones next. In March, after the scenarios report was published, the next phase in the project was to develop a proposed network and to have conversations about the trade-offs. So we met with you all in March, and where we landed with that was your recommendation was that we, in the trade-off between resources for service and resources for fare programs, a split of 65 for service, 35 for fare programs. At that time, you made a recommendation that we increase our ridership coverage trade-off to 80 to 85%, and to develop a system that is agile and adaptable as technology innovations change, to make sure that it continues to be aligned with community goals and focuses on service that is more useful. At the March board meeting, the board of directors mirrored that and asked staff to develop a network that focused our the metropolitan resources 80 to 85% towards a higher ridership model, with up to 5% of those resources focused on non-fixed route mobility. So JWA went to work to develop a network, and we shared that proposed network in August, as well as a draft implementation plan. And we had another touch tone with you all and with the board. And what we heard in August from SPC was that you are in support of the proposed ridership network. You asked that implementation be put out in a thoughtful process, and that communication was really key. At that time, we had a conversation about whether we should implement all at once or in a phased approach. And while the group saw the virtues of both approaches, landed within a phased approach being the most feasible and practical. The board in August also mirrored that position and asked staff to advance the proposed network for further study and implementation planning. So we started that process. And through November to March, staff was involved with implementation planning and developing a phase three outreach program. And so your recommendation in November, which we took to heart, was to delay the implementation and do some further outreach to provide some more clarity on the positive aspects. Your feedback to us in January and in March were pretty close to along those lines of continuing to pursue a higher ridership model, but making sure that we are engaging our stakeholders and public in an intentional process and make sure that we are reaching the people who stand to gain or lose from service. So some of the recommendations were also to engage a smaller number of people in the community to have some cross-fertilization of ideas. So that we were in the process of doing that engagement when the COVID pandemic started to happen. So the following month, the board did ask us to pause the Transit Tomorrow process until COVID restrictions were lifted. They asked us in April to really put our focus towards providing, focusing our service planning on making sure we have a system that provides those vital trips for, or an essential trips, and that a health first approach is what we should be focusing our service planning on. So we have been doing that to date. So what we want to talk about now is where do we go from here? We do plan to have a discussion with the board at their August meeting, their regular board meeting, and ask them if it's time for us to resume work on this. And so we wanted to just talk about what that means. And I'm going to pass it to Tom to talk more about where we're at now and what comes next.
Great, thanks, Jennifer. So we are, as we all know, in a different time and place than we were, a year ago for sure. And so as we've been adapting during this period, we've certainly, we've learned a lot of things and thought about kind of where things are going. There is, as folks have said, a lot of uncertainty around, and I'll just kind of frame things in a couple of different ways. One is there are uncertainties related to both the resources that we have to work with. So being largely payroll tax funded, when the economy is down, our receipts are down, we can't put as much service out. On the other side of that equation, the mobility needs of the community are less than they were before. And so strategically, we're looking at how we need to, again, adapt to balancing both of those things. And I'll talk a little more about that later. But the table that we provided here just gives you a sense of the scale of the service we were operating relative to what we're operating now. So in 2019, had about 280,000 revenue hours over the course of the year. In 2020, a slight increase. We budgeted for close to 290,000, and then due to COVID hitting towards the tail end of the fiscal year, we ended up only operating 250,000. And then, I know board members have gone through this, but in the first month and a half, 2 months of COVID, so March and in April, we really drastically reduced our service. We're operating about 50% of what we would normally operate. It's maybe 60%. And so go ahead and move forward. And in going through this, the board has articulated that ridership productivity is not the goal during this time. We took that and thought about it. And that's true for two reasons. First, we want to make sure that the resources that we do have are being put toward providing a useful level of service that meets the demands we're observing for this period. And second, we need to be able to run enough frequency on certain routes to avoid too many people on a bus at one time. So there are limits, and I'll talk more about this, to the number of passengers. We're trying to limit the loads on our buses now, if you hadn't heard that. So the board has taken what I've characterized as a public health first approach in the deployment of our service, basically articulating that we should be safely operating the minimum level of service that can be provided for essential trip making in the region. So that's what we've done. And what I really like about that statement is it really does balance those two things, you know, the resources we have to operate, and then what trips are needed. I will say, as an aside, one of the things that we're experiencing now is, while as you know, unemployment is still very high in the region, but traffic levels, at least according to a traffic engineer with the city of Eugene that we work with, he said he did a look, and traffic levels are back to 90% or more of pre-COVID conditions. And that's interesting in and of itself, but how it affects us is that the level of service that we're operating right now has lower frequencies, and I'll get into more of the details there, but also because we're operating what is essentially an enhanced Sunday level of service, we're using the Sunday travel times. And what we're finding is that we are struggling to keep the schedule. We're going to address that, but it's just been a learning experience for us to see, oh yeah, you know, that's why we adapt our schedules during the week to accommodate the traffic. So just wanted to reference to the fact that we're doing a number of things to do our part in reducing the spread of COVID. And we regularly sanitize our buses. Again, I mentioned we limit our 40-foot buses to 20 passengers and our 60-foot buses to 30 passengers. And a note there, if you have ridden the bus, there may be occasions where you see on either 40-foot or 60-foot buses, more than 20 passengers. Though our analysis suggests there aren't many more. But what these limits don't recognize, and our drivers are trained to kind of make an assessment, but there are families that are traveling together, and they don't have the same social distancing requirements. And so where we've might have more passengers than 20. It's first of all, it's largely due to families, but also our analysis has shown that those loads are fairly short duration in terms of being overloads. So, it might be four or five blocks on a total route. Other steps that we've taken to protect both the drivers and our passengers is we have what we call a white line. If you've ridden the bus, typically it's been at the front door. We've moved that back behind the driver so that the driver is, and we're doing rear door boarding. So the drivers, and we've stopped collecting fares. So the drivers aren't in contact with the riders as they're coming on board. We require all staff and passengers to wear face masks, whether they're on our vehicles or on our property. Again, I said we have suspended fares for the time being. We are working on installing protective shields for the bus operators, and those are expected to be fully implemented in the September to October timeframe. And again, we're continuously monitoring the conditions and trying to adapt as need be. An example of that is where we have persistent overloads, we've added what's called trippers. You know, we'll put trips on or add trips to certain times to address those overloads. So those are the things that we're doing to, again, take that public health first approach to the deployment of our service. You want to go to the next slide, please? There we go. So just to give you an example, for our current service, we're operating the same service Monday through Saturday. We do have higher frequency on MX routes, 10 to 15 minute service over the course of the day. But it's hourly service on most routes. Though again, to help manage loads, we've added some frequency or added buses basically. Most of our rural routes operate two trips per day, and the span of service is from 7:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. In contrast to approximately a 5 a.m. to midnight schedule during normal time. So it's we've reduced the span. And then Sunday service is the same as pre-COVID. So it's a little bit less than what we're operating the rest of the week. As we think about it from a service planning standpoint, we're focused on our core routes, and that's basically the frequent transit network that runs on the arterials. We want to make sure that that service is working well, as those routes provide access to the most number of people, has the highest density of communities of concern, and serves major activity centers and essential services in the region, and also have the highest ridership. So kind of our approach to thinking about that is where we have resources, we're gonna add span to core routes. An example of this is going to be the service we put out in the fall to address, and we're in very frequent contact with the U of O transportation folks on this, but we expect there to be some additional campus population, and so we're putting service out to address that. Again, adding spot frequency where we see load capacity issues. Looking at shifting our service in response to school reopening, and as I'm sure you all know, that timing remains uncertain. We've been working with the Springfield School District's transportation manager, and so we're pretty aware of what they're up against in terms of reopening versus not reopening at all. We're adding, you know, resources available. We would add more frequent peak service. But at this point, again, as you saw in the previous chart, our budget for service is a lot less than it would be in a normal period. And the notion of having all day frequency is not feasible at this point with our budget. So those are the things that we're taking into consideration as we adapt incrementally to the conditions as they change. One specific thing, and I think most of the committee is aware of this, we are building a new transit station out in Santa Clara, and that project is on schedule to be completed actually at the end of December. With an opening, so we'd start operating out of there as part of our winter bid, which would be the beginning of February. Next. So again, we've said this, but I'll reiterate the fact that we face a lot of uncertainties moving forward. Not just the duration and form of the pandemic, but also, and again, this affects both sides of our equation in terms of resources and the strength of the market, but the pace and form of the economic recovery. And like I said, that has an impact on the payroll tax receipts that we need to operate our service, and also the size and structure of the mobility market. And the next bullet down there, who will LTD riders be in the short, medium, and long term, is an interesting question for us. And again, it is certainly there's some uncertainties. Right now, I would say when you look at our ridership, we're carrying about 12,000 boardings a day. That's roughly one third of what we were operating on a normal average weekday. But it's a very consistent week to week. So we feel that there are a lot of people that are using it every day to get to work. So, you know, in the short run, we don't expect there to be a lot of increase in ridership, though. At some point, we're also, from an economic standpoint, you know, if we put out more service, we'd probably get additional ridership, but the resources don't provide a lot of that. So, again, schools, when will they reopen? How will they reopen? We're looking at ways in which we can help the school districts should there be a need. And again, that's highly uncertain here coming up in September. Remote work. Again, we've been in contact with some of our partner agencies in terms of reopening and what that looks like to bring people back in the office. We're also looking at, you know, certainly our experience, and I know others that I work with in other agencies are finding remote work to be fairly reasonable. I mean, we're getting work done. So we may see a mix of people coming back to work in the office. It may be, you know, not every day they come into the office, maybe a couple days a week they're working remotely. However that works out, that's going to affect a big part of our ridership base, which is the commute trip. The other side of that is if we have a lower commute trip, it doesn't create as much in terms of peaking service, and that's the most expensive service that we put out is the peak service. So there's a lot of uncertainties in those things. And again, as things reopen, we'll move away from just primarily essential trips to, you know, other trip making for other purposes as well. So all those uncertainties point to the need to really pivot to a new normal, and we don't know what that's going to look like yet. But in the short or in the near term, we're not in a position financially, nor is there the need to operate the network that existed before COVID. We don't have the resources to implement the level of service proposed in Transit Tomorrow. However, we need to be able to make changes to service incrementally, again, within the confines of the budget and the market need for mobility. We're looking to the board to help us guide decisions on this incremental change process by adopting a new service policy, which will, it was drafted in February, but due to the situation, we haven't brought it out yet, but that would be something we'd look at that could really help us in terms of making decisions around how we make service changes in the coming months. So what we're looking for, and again, we're thinking winter, but the board still has to make that decision about when they want to restart the discussion on Transit Tomorrow. But the new service policy would set the ridership and coverage targets, and it would revisit some of the principles that define how service changes will be evaluated. For example, in our existing service policy, there is no reference to triple bottom line types of principles that might govern how we make decisions on service. And then this would create a framework for staff to follow in assessing and making those incremental service changes. So I think that's the presentation, and I'd ask for any questions or comments.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, for that. I think that was really helpful to get us resettled with, you know, the changes that LTD has seen recently and how that kind of our previous conversations around transit tomorrow and really service coverage as a whole. I saw a hand from Sherry, and so we'll Sherry and then Mike.
Yes, thank you. That was very informative. And I had a couple of comments. I was wondering if the safety health information and the reasons for the changes in service are clearly stated on the website so the community is aware of what's happening. I know that some of the information about how you're cleaning the buses, that kind of things is available. So is that information available on the website and out to the public?
I believe we've put that all that out on the website. In fact, I want to say we drew some of that language in our presentation from the language on the website. So.
Okay, and then my other question, I just had a concern about our employees, our bus drivers, and wanted to know, you know, what has happened to the LTD staff? Have you cut back? Have you cut time? You know, what has happened with the LTD staff, the drivers, and that sort of thing?
AJ, you might have a better answer to that.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, making sure I'm not double muted. Yes, there have been a lot of changes about how LTD deploys the bus service. We have continued to make changes and adjustments that you were seeing at the different phases. Typically, operators bid for their assignment and have a fairly stable schedule with not a lot of modifications to it. Now we've made changes multiple times. Their schedules change. Part of our operators helping us with the cleaning, wipe down crew. We're rotating them in. Definitely, they're wearing masks and having temperatures taken. So a lot has changed in the way they do business. What we have heard from some operators, especially the operators that operate the regular fixed route, they're used to having their customers board through the front door, pay their fare, smile, kind of interact. That is their connection. And our operators really connect with their customers and know them very well. It's what makes, you know, the day go by very well. Now their customers are boarding through the rear doors. And even when they see them, you know, as they pull up the bus, their customers are already starting to, you know, wearing face coverings. So they don't know who's smiling. You know, they said there's a lot lost in that human interaction that really brings that level of job satisfaction to them. So yes, their working conditions, their schedules have changed. We did do a workforce reduction a couple of months back to adjust to our service levels. And that's also hard on our culture. So as we look towards the future and how we could serve our community and respond to what we see, that even with COVID-19, the need for transportation has not gone away. Tom mentioned to you all that we reduced the level of service because of the ridership reduction. Yet they're looking at adjusting schedules because what we're seeing is that congestion during the weekdays is not reflective of the fact that less people are working or need transportation. So more people are using their vehicles, and our buses have to be, schedules have to be adjusted to respond to that. So we're really looking at how we make decisions responsibly and we look at the long-term transportation needs of our community. And as we implement them, we want to take our employees in consideration at how those decisions affect their working conditions. And Tom talked a little bit about the barriers, that shields that will be put to protect our employees' health, but again, creates a distancing from the community that they serve and they feel very connected. So Sherry, thank you so much for asking about our employees. Definitely it's changed the way transit employees conduct business every day.
Would it be at all possible for the driver to greet people audibly when they enter the bus? Is there a speaker and, you know, that microphone and that sort of thing?
They are making announcements using the speaker, the external speaker. So they are doing that. But I think it's a lot of that human interaction.
Yeah.
The smiling they said, even when I was speaking to them about this, they just said, even talking, they don't know if I'm smiling as I greet them. They don't know in what context things are. And that's something that they value. They also value their breaks, lunch periods in which they socialize with each other intermittently. And that, of course, we have to be very careful about how we provide that environment. So definitely in this new world of COVID-19, we definitely have a public health first and employee health first model. But we do know that as we move forward, we want to figure out how we bring back those aspects of public transportation that really connect employees to the community and make our community feel connected with our employees.
So thank you. I think that was really helpful information. I want to make sure we only have minutes left of our meeting, and just to center our conversation on, I think, the question that Jennifer asked at the beginning, which was kind of, is it time to resume work on kind of the service network change? And that's really the recommendation that the board is looking to us for as they take that back up at their meeting next week. So just want to kind of center our last 20 minutes around that, that leading question around, is it time to resume this work? And if so, how does that maybe look different? So Mike, you had a hand up.
Yeah, I have two things. One is I just want to make sure I understand. We're using the word ridership in place of the word productivity, where we had used productivity versus coverage in the past. Is that right, Tom?
That is correct.
Okay. The other point is there may be some things we can plan for, but I really don't. This situation is so fluid that I don't see how we can do very much other than encourage the district to continue to be nimble and responsive and flex with where the needs seem to take the service. I don't see how we can do much more than that right now.
I don't know if you want a response, Mike, or.
Well, maybe sure. I'd be interested in response from you, Tom, but also from other board members, from the committee members.
Well, Tom, just as, yeah, please.
So the challenge we have in front of us is that despite the COVID-19 pandemic, we have not seen that the need for what Greg talked about, having a premier service, have gone away. And without a good or some type of further deployment of our transit system, people either have no access to transit right now because we just can't put that service there, just speculating, or people are using their vehicle. What we do know is that there's still a need for people to have a good mobility choice. And what we need to decide is a few things. First, we want to look at where our fixed route makes sense. And our fixed routes make sense when we have higher ridership model. And where our fixed route does not make as much sense, we need to really deliberately move toward mobility management and make some real commitments to our community about how we're going to provide them access to that transit network or to other unserved areas. And what we know is that sometimes people need to just travel during short trips within communities to access essential services. And if they have no transit system, and transit system could look more than a bus. And what we're saying is, unless we deploy the primary structure and make some decisions about where large buses go, where we know we have higher demands, we can't start working to say, if large buses go here, what is not served? What's a mile out? And those individuals today have zero service. So Tom can kind of explain that a little bit more, but the current level of service really does not run every route right now. And us putting another bus out there to carry two people, we don't feel is the most responsible thing to do. But just because we're saying that we should not likely be putting a 40 or 60 foot bus to carry two people, doesn't mean those two people don't have a need for transportation. And what we have said is that LTD has a responsibility at least to assess those needs and provide this committee with some possible solutions for them to recommend to the board of directors and then the board to ultimately adopt. So without us doing something at some point, that means those areas will continue to not be served. And what we want people currently not served today because of COVID-19, we want them to know that at least we're thinking about them and planning for them, and we'll have a plan of action on how we will serve them. And it might be a 40 or 60 foot bus, and it might be something else. But to say that we just will not consider them, we feel as staff, it is our duty to bring this forward. We definitely respect this independent body's input about that discussion, and then ultimately whatever the board of directors, but we felt at the staff level, we wanted to make sure that despite what we are managing, we do have capacity to be looking towards some service model that will serve our community in a premier way.
Greg, I think I saw a hand from you a minute or two ago.
Yeah, you did. So I have a question. You know, we have transit agencies all over the country that are in the same boat.
Greg, I'm going to stop you for a second.
Has there emerged any new best practices?
I think what I heard you say was based on what other transit agencies are experiencing across the country. Have any best practices emerged in response? Is that fair? Okay. Tom, I don't know if you have any comments on that.
Yeah, based on your interpretation. And I know, Greg, it might help if you stop the video.
Basically it.
Okay, there we go. So
what can we steal from the world?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's how things work too. But we're always looking at what our partners are doing and
is that better?
That's better. Yeah. Both Greg and Mike in particular are familiar with the fact that we're part of the American Bus Benchmarking Group. Mm-hmm. And so there have been some analysis, in fact, that just came out that speaks to how at least that group has responded to COVID. And what we've seen in the analysis, I would say just reflect on two things. One is the amount of service that that districts have continued to operate is variable. Utah, for example, Utah Transit, which serves largely the Salt Lake City area, they are operating at about 80% of their pre-COVID conditions, whereas we're closer to 55 to 60%. And so there's and when you then translate that into, again, while we're not concerned about productivity, you know, we are operating at about 30 passengers per revenue hour now, whereas Utah, which is part of this bus benching group that we're in, is close. In fact, the majority of, I think there's 23 bus groups, or, you know, operators there, the majority of them are closer to 15. So, you know, that's in part there, some of them are much larger systems, but, you know, and we have the virtue of being small is we can put out a good level of transit service that still gets used. And so, but to your question, Greg, we are always looking for how others are doing things and how we can benefit from incorporating those strategies.
Thanks.
Yeah, I can weigh in a little bit too on that.
Oh, there's Mark.
Yeah. Sorry, I got caught in the audience. So I think right now it's really interesting when you ask for best practices because, you know, of what's going on in the industry, you know, everything is disrupted. But what agencies are doing right now is planning for the future because we are going to come out of this thing and we are going to, you know, have our ridership back at some point. And now is the time really to think about that and think about what do we want to look like in the future. And that's why we're talking and having this discussion with you now. It's like, look, you know, right now ridership is down and things are dicey, but they're not forever going to be that way. So what are we going to look like going forward? And so we really need to have that discussion with, you know, you guys and our advisory groups and, you know, our board and, you know, try to figure out, okay, you know, we do have some time and resources right now to kind of push forward and build the system of the future. And so that's really kind of what we're asking about tonight. So thanks.
Franny, I saw your hand and then Joe.
Yeah. I appreciate what you said, AJ, about, you know, being the premier, you know, working toward that, and also what Mark just said. And in that line of thinking, I think it makes sense to kind of go into a phased approach. I mean, similar to, you know, everybody's phasing everything. It seems like COVID phases and whatnot, but why not have the end result be, you know, back to normal, but to get there, we phase it in. And maybe it's starting with the high ridership network, the fixed route, getting some focus. The other thing is, you know, what I'm also seeing that's happening is there's more and more people using cars, but there's also more and more people using electric bikes. Now there's the scooters, and other mobility devices. And there's also, I think now, you know, as we phase into this, some people will have a little bit longer of a way to get to the bus stop. They're going to have to rely on another mode of transportation, maybe to do that last mile piece. Why not, while you're phasing in to your ultimate configuration, do a lot of education around, okay, community, for those of you that don't know, this is how you get a bicycle on the bus. You know, that's a barrier to some people. It's a barrier to people that are disabled, you know, mentally. They're like, it's a barrier. I mean, you know, I don't know how to do it, so I'm not going to take my bike on the bus, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, doing that thoughtful education, helping people with scooters realize this is how you bring your equipment on the bus if it's small and compact. These are ways that you can have access with other devices and still use the bus for that big, for that your main trip. Those kinds of things, like, you know, just bringing the community along with that phased approach, I think will be really helpful. And also, I don't like the idea of just stopping and doing nothing, because it'll lose its momentum with the community. I mean, I appreciate what the comments were from the audience tonight about it's scary times, we shouldn't change anything. But if we don't have, you know, kind of constant, slow, even if it's slow, incremental movement toward, I think we lose something. We end up going back too far. So, you know, pushing forward ever so slightly, maybe not in the same way we were before, maybe more thoughtfully and a little bit slower, but, you know, phase it nonetheless, I think is really the prudent way to go.
Thanks, Franny. Joe, and then maybe Marianne, I saw you came off mute.
Two comments and an observation. Comment number one, every period of disinvestment is a period of reinvestment. That's a truism. So it makes absolutely no sense to stand still. Observation, I'm not kidding you. I've been like specifically, Aurora, looking at you. I press the Zoom thing to make your face bigger, and you haven't moved like at all. It's fascinating to me, your ability to manage movement. No, and then the third point is, it really feels to me like we're already in transit tomorrow. It wasn't the tomorrow we envisioned, but we're here. And it's not a tomorrow that's gonna last forever. So I think what you're talking about is identifying those principles, right? I mean, I rely on Mark and on Tom and on Aurora, because your work life is studying best practices and how to modify to maximize, you know, whatever in a very uncertain and unstable environment. But I would rely on you. It sure feels to me like, regardless, we're going to have main arteries and we're going to have smaller vehicles, hopefully with zero carbon emissions. And hopefully one day, instead of talking about triple bottom line, we'll talk about zero carbon emissions and how we get there. But that's another day. The principles of reaching everyone through smaller and smaller vehicles, more flexible mobile service, feeding into a mainframe, I think, is what we're looking for you to provide. And it's sort of inevitable however we get out of this. I think some unknowns are how many people will no longer be working at the office? How many people or will be doing it part-time? How many commercial spaces are gonna stop paying their rent because they don't need that much space? How is that going to affect payroll taxes? I mean, there's bigger issues out there that we simply don't know the answers to, but keep on planning and keep on moving the pieces. My thoughts.
Thank you. Marianne?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I agree with what Franny said about just kind of moving forward on a phased approach. I feel like, you know, we agreed a year ago that these were the sort of principles that we wanted to go forward with, was that sort of 85% ridership model. And I feel like even though everything's really weird right now, but if those principles made sense in the past, they likely still make sense despite weirdness. And I think if our goal is to have people choose mass transit, if it's super limited in service or in what's available, people aren't going to make that choice. And so in order for this to be a continually viable option for people, I think the principles of transit tomorrow still apply.
Thank you. Sherry?
I Thank you. So just quickly to say, too, that, you know, one of the problems we encountered when we were doing Transit to Merle was this fear of change. There was so much fear of change. Well, change has happened. So now would be the perfect time to implement more change in some ways. So that's my thought.
Anyone hasn't? Amy, others?
Leah, I would just like to thank this committee, and I think Mike also has, but if I may just thank this committee, I think this input will be extremely valuable to a productive conversation at the board. And Leah, I'm sure if, you know, you're available, or I think Marianne's available, it would be good. And I could work with staff to help develop some of the summary that we heard today. I think collective and individual comments today are very helpful to us to understand how our community is looking at it, at us, at LTD, and what we can be doing to respond to these needs.
Thanks, AJ. I think we have a couple more quick comments, but yes, I will take you up on that offer. So Mike, and then Carl, and then we'll wrap.
I just wanted to reiterate what Marianne said. I think that the principles of Transit Tomorrow are valid. The way we roll them out, the speed at which we roll them out may vary, but those were well thought out principles. So that's all I wanted to say.
Great. And Carl?
Yeah, I just want to say, as a board member, your comments are really helpful, and this is exactly the kind of thing that we want to get from SBC. So thanks again.
Great. And I'll just add, I think what struck me in this conversation and in Tom's presentation, Tom and Jennifer's presentation, is that we're still looking at who will LTD's riders be in the short term, medium term, and long term based on all of these different factors we've talked about. Right now, I think we know in the short term that it's the transit dependent and it's our, you know, essential workers as we currently to them. So for me, in thinking about that, that just kind of underlines the importance of equity as a part of our approach and kind of our immediate response to service changes and kind of the incremental changes you all have already been doing. So maintaining that as kind of a focus throughout this process and as we kind of land on these guiding principles, or as the board does, I think will be really important. With 2 minutes left, I will kind of wrap us up unless folks have anyone didn't get to comment or have any final words.
Joe had a hand up a while ago. No?
Good.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, okay. But no.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you all engaging in this conversation, and I think we could have continued this conversation for a lot longer than our 30 minutes or so. I will plan, and I'm guessing Marianne will as well, to be at the next board meeting and to provide a short summary of our thoughts, both on the kind of why statement as well as this continuing Transit Tomorrow conversation. I know it's not a super concrete recommendation that we're giving to the board this month, but hopefully some of these high-level thoughts will be helpful as they continue that conversation and as we all continue to kind of watch and see what happens across the community and certainly the impacts on transit. With that, I will let everybody go and enjoy the rest of your nights, and I look forward to seeing you all in a month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.